We asked the question 2 weeks ago and last week, and we gave different answers. And it's a standalone. So even if you weren't here last week and 2 weeks ago, you could follow, but it's tied in. This was the question we had. Esther was chosen. Esther was seized as the queen in the story of Esther. She got grabbed by the king and now became the queen. Esther was chosen to be the queen of Persia. In America today, we understand if the queen's in the White House, you're taking care of the building codes. You're not going to jail. You could storm the Capitol and you'll be freed. It's a good political joke, right? You could be the mayor of New York and do anything wrong. You're getting away with it. If you know the president, you're good. If you know the king, you're good. And Mordecai, in the worst political move, what we would say, obviously, the worst political move of all time, he tells Esther, as you know from the story, do not say you're a Jew. So we asked the question last week and 2 weeks ago. Go to riverhub.com and on Insta, and not Instagram. What's it called again? God, the other thing's called. Whatever that podcast thing is called. What's it called, actually? Spotify. For other answers we gave the last 2 weeks. But we said that we have looked around. There's many approaches. But today we're going to take a very original approach. And this idea, Stephen, I told you this idea about 18 years ago. And the idea is, whoa. Now, this is how it goes. The idea, Stephen, I told you 18 years ago. I didn't tell you how it ties into this question. That only came up a couple of days ago. Well, not me, someone else. The rule of thumb is, in Judaism, there are three steps to when we take over when Mashiach's going to come. This is an open Talmudic passage, open my mind is. When the Messiah arrives, we're going to anoint the king, maybe Messiah himself, anoint the king. When that kicks in, at that moment in time, as Charles listened to the Spotify in the last few weeks, is at that moment in time, the obligation to kill Amalek steps in. Right now, it's a question. If you would meet an Amalek character, and Amalek, we're going to read this Shabbos, that's why this is a beautiful shirt, tying and everything. This Shabbos, we read about the prohibition that we have of waging war against them. Don't be nice to them. Kill everyone out. We're not going to kill Amalek. First of all, we're in America. Don't go to jail for that necessarily. Let's say, does the a law apply even to that? That means if you knew you can kill, you knew a guy genetically, you prove it. He has DNA that goes back to Amalek. He's an evil Amaleki. We have an obligation to kill these people. Do you have an obligation? If you knew you couldn't get caught, no big brother watching you, no DNA, you're wearing your gloves, should you kill the guy? Huge debate. Many commentators say it is not applicable today. Same way, today you can't be making sacrifices of animals on the Temple Mount. A lot of 613 don't apply today. This one does not apply. Why does it not apply? Because it only applies when we have a king. So when Mashiach comes, first thing we're going to do, anoint the king. Second thing we're going to do, wage war against Amalek. Third thing, when we win that war, we're going to go build the temple, the final temple. Those are the three things that kick in. Now, this order of system is how it works. We find a very interesting thing. We've been reading it this Shabbos. When Amalek attacked the Jews in the desert, when Amalek attacked the Jews in the desert, what occurred? God told Moses, take Yeshua, we're going to read it, take Yeshua, Joshua, and let him wage battle. You stand on the mountain. When you lift your hands, we're going to win. And you have two people next to you, Aaron and Hur. It's all good. Now, the question asked by the commentators who think of the things, I understand, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't go to war itself. When he fought the Midianites, no one went to battle. Moshe Rabbeinu sort of went with. When they're going into Pharaoh, I don't know if you call that a war, whatever you call that, the back and forth, let my people go. God didn't tell Moses, oh, by the way, you said Joshua, you stand in the background, lift your hands. What? No. Moses went in. Moshe Rabbeinu is going in. Why over here? Is he appointing Yeshua to do the battle? By the way, Yeshua's a soldier. I don't know, when you read about Yeshua, he seems like a guy who cleans the base measure. He's a guy who sits and learns all day, right? So what's he going to the battle? Why him? So one of the brilliant answers is this concept. The war against Amalek is an eternal battle. We read about it, the eternal battle from then till the Messianic Revelation, we're going to fight Amalek. Who is going to be the victorious leaders against Amalek? Not Judah dynasty. Not the Levites, Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron. No, who's going to lead the battle? The children of Rachel, probably more so even Binyamin. Rachel had two kids, Yosef and Binyamin. Clearly, the Rachel kids we'll discuss in a second, and even more so the Binyamin child. The Binyamin. Now, the Medrash even says on Esther that when Esav approached Mordecai, and he told him, "Just do me a favor, bow down. I'm begging you, bow down. I don't want to do this. Please, just bow down, make me look good." And he says, "I'm not going to do it." And at one measure says that Haman turned to Mordecai and said, listen, buddy, your grandfather already bowed down to me, my grandfather. Because when Esav approaches Yaakov and all the kids are here, it says everyone bowed down. So just do it. It's been done. History is not a brand new thing. It's been done before. Just do it. And Mordechai's response to the Medrash was, oh, you made a mistake, buddy. Because I come from the Benjamin tribe. We didn't bow down. Why? We're born here. So all 11 brothers might have bowed down. Joseph's a question. But Benjamin, no. I didn't bow down. And therefore, my great-grandfather didn't bow down to your great-grandfather. I ain't bowing down to you. But what happens is this. Since we said before, this is the genius idea of all time. Since we said before that how the system works out is that we first make a king, war, then build the Beis Hamikdash. This second step and third step are interconnected. The one who wages the war against Amalek gets a victory spoils that the Beis Hamikdash goes into their territory. So let's go Yeshua. A guess of what Joshua's tribe is, Yeshua's tribe. I'll read it to you. It's an open passage. When they sent out the spies in Parsha Shalach, it says like this. From the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea ben Nun. So you don't need me to tell you this. Open verse in the Torah. Joshua came from Ephraim. Joshua came from Ephraim. So God, Moshe ben tells Yeshua, listen, we're going to war against Amalek. You come from Bnei Rachel, you're a Rachel child, Ephraim and Manasseh, Yosef. It's all good now. You get in there and do the battle. Okay. Yeshua, he follows instructions. He goes into the battle. What happens after the war with Amalek? We build the tabernacle. We build the Mishkan. Now, in the desert, the Mishkan was a floating thing. It was moving around. When we get into Israel proper, what was the main location where the Mishkan was stationed?
Shiloh.
Excellent. I don't know who just said it. Shiloh. And now, as an easy one, if you're paying attention, who's under
in, who's
it's under Ephraim.
Oh,
Yosef was the same thing. Yosef was not so fine. In Ephraim's portion of Israel was where the Shiloh is located. So Yeshua makes the fight. He's from Ephraim. We build the Mishkan in Ephraim. The first great war against Amalek. One for one. Now go to the next one. What's the next great war against Amalek, which we read about this week as well? No, that's the next one.
But not.
No, Amalek, come on. So the first war against Amalek is Joshua. The second great war against Amalek, which we'll read about this week, I think, in the Torah, Saul the king.
Oh, yeah.
Saul the king.
Agag.
And Agag. Saul goes after Agag, and they left one person alive. We're not going through all the details of the story for now, but Saul is the one fighting Amalek. Saul is a, say it again, a Benjamite. What happens is, now, Saul, by the way, if you know who Saul is, he's the one who anoints. He's the king, and then right after he becomes king, right, becomes David and Solomon. We're within a short time, the first base of Mikdash is going to be built. Where is the first base of Mikdash being built?
Binyamin.
So when it's Yeshua fighting, it goes to Ephraim. When Saul fights, Binyamin base of Mikdash, in the tribe with eight goats. Third battle against Amalek, Purim story. Mordechai is who?
Benjamin.
Mordechai is Benjamin. And who's not, and then right after the story of Mordechai and Esther, when they build the second temple. So we see an amazing concept.
Good pattern.
Unbelievable. I said it to Stephen 15, 18 years ago.
Who knew this? You knew this?
There's not.
Where's the spy?
No, this.
No, but who?
Who put it together? Yeah. It's put together by a lot, but I saw by Ron Culver.
But like later days, like recently.
This is I saw by Ron Culver. These are one of these things that's been going on in different forms. He just said it like this, perfect. In my way, I just, you know, eye-opening, beautiful, right? So the war we do, we anoint the king. We then do the Battle of Amalek, and the person who's leading the Battle of Amalek is rewarded by having the sanctuary, if that's the right word, now in his location. But that's what it comes down to. So that's the first introduction. We stopped here. We just had a great idea.
We need to get the Benjaminite right now. We wouldn't know who's the Benjaminite. Because we know where the town is going to be.
Oh,
so we don't know who the Benjaminite is.
He loves Rav Aaron Cutler's idea so much. Rav Aaron Cutler adds on that before Mashiach shows up, we have two Mashiachs, right?
And Yosef.
And Yosef. The first Mashiach is going to come from Yosef, and he writes, Rav Aaron writes, the reason why he has to come from Yosef. Why is there Mashiach on Yosef first? Just start with Messianic Revelation. We need the Mashiach on Yosef first to come do battle against Amalek. And after Mashiach on Yosef do battle against Amalek, then we'll build the third temple. He has it in Rav Aaron Cutler. Jew just got correct. So that's all the introduction, which is a wow factor. In my opinion, which I said in this class many, over a decade ago, easy, maybe two decades ago. Now, how do we tie it to this question? Because I saw a grand rabbi say like this. Real, like a much. The question was, why did Mordechai tell Esther, mum's the word, take advantage? Say, guess what, Achashverosh, you married a Jew. You know what that means, you married a Jew? Line my pockets. Mordechai didn't do that. He said, don't take advantage. Don't say who you are. So I saw an answer say that Mordechai realized that there's going to be a battle. He knew the second base of Megiddo is going to be built. The 70 years are running out. We were in exile in Babylonia in bubble for 70 years. That was the whole party by Achashverosh. He thought the 7 years ended. Belshazzar thought the 7 years ended. But we knew, we don't know when the 7 years began. That was the problem. We don't know when the 7 years began. We knew, but someone had to figure one in. They had a prophecy at the end of the first temple, first base of Megiddo, saying, at the end of 7 years, you're going to return. So all the non-Jewish kings, when they thought the 7 years up, they made a big party. You're stuck in exile forever. They just miscalculated when the 7 years began. They made a mistake. In the end, it worked out well. From the destruction of the first base of Megiddo, 70 years later, it was over. They weren't going from the destruction. They were going from earlier portions. When there was an exile, when they took over the kingdom, before the actual destruction, they made a bad accounting. So Mordechai knew, they're off, but it's coming. We're running out of time here. You know, it's coming. It's going to happen. Which means we got to wage a war against Amalek before that. Let me start planning, because Mordechai was a political genius. Maybe not lining his pockets, a political genius, but genius in the real way. So he said to himself like this, I got to have this battle come out against Haman. I need the battle to affect the building of the base of Mikdash. There has to be that thing going on here. So let me think what I'm going to do here. If I announce to the world that the queen is Jewish, you know what that's going to do to Haman? It's going to scour into the sewer. He's not going to want to do a battle. Hey, you go to Achashverosh, so let's kill the Jews. What? That's my wife. That's my wife. This is what happened in the end, right? At the end, when Esther revealed herself and said, by the way, this guy's trying to get rid of me. What happened to Haman? They hung him on a tree. So Mordechai wanted that in that situation, whatever the word is, that chessboard. He wanted the chessboard to stop playing out. And he said to himself, wait a second. In order for this chessboard to play out, yeah, me and Haman, at one point, we're going to battle. Yeah, we're going to figure it out. We're going to figure it out. But I got to get the war start. I got to beat him in the war. The only way to get into the war is you got to start the war. Haman, I got to make sure Haman feels a little confident. Let him feel a little confident. He said, you know what? I'll take on the Jews now. So I'm giving him poking the beer. And Haman's getting up there and saying, oh, I'm good. You know how good we are? We said last week, RabbiHaman.com, for the Garbos who weren't in the class, one of the ideas was, on the rope-a-dope, was that Esther, Vashti was the queen. She's out. Now we got to find a new queen. We find Esther. And then at one point, Esther saves the king's life. Two people were trying a coup. That's not even a coup. They tried to poison the king, Bigson and Seresh, and Esther found out about it, and Esther reveals the plot. Saves the king. So we said last week that the way it comes out in the Psukkim is as soon as they save the king, right after that it says, Haman rose to great authority. Why is Haman going to great? Esther saves the thing. Why is Haman going to great authority? So the commentators point out, yeah, because as soon as Esther saved the king's life, Haman came forward and said, you know, by the way, king, Esther's a good one, right? Saved your life. Are you convinced, Vashti, who defied your authority in public, would have for sure saved your life? What do you think? What do you think, Esther? Is there a possibility she would have stepped up to the plate? Esther stepped up to the plate. Do you know why Esther's your queen right now? Because of me. Because I was involved to get Vashti out. When you were fumfering, you were like, I think we should have Vashti get forgiven. And I was like, no. Bad idea. Well, chapter one in Esther. And you know what that means now? Your life is saved because of your queen that I put into place. I'm looking for lining my pockets here with a promotion, a new title, head of Doge. A new title. So they brought him in. So Haman was gaining. But Mordechai realized as he's watching the big picture, doesn't get bogged down with the details. He's looking at the big picture, he's saying, wait a second. We cannot have Esther be known as Jewish because then this whole thing won't work out. Haman's not going to move forward. He's not going to get the confidence that Esther's on his side. Esther knows that, yeah, I brought you in there. Remember, he's telling Esther also, good job saving the king. Excellent job. You know, he gave me a promotion. You know why Esther Achashverosh gave me promotion? When you did something good, I'm the one who got you in here. We're on the same team. So Haman's moving up in the ranks, getting confident. He says, you know what? It's time to battle Mordechai. He's rolling the dice, literally rolling the dice and saying, I'm going after them. But that only works is if no one knows that Esther is a Jewish queen hidden in the house. So Mordechai, years before, is telling Esther, not a word. So that is Long Road. That is answer number, guess, five, six, I don't know what we're up to at this point in time over the last 3 weeks. So today is answer number one. Answer number one is Mordechai was poking the beer, trying to get Haman excited. And I want to add to this what someone does say. It's a very similar answer. That let's say she would have said, I am Jewish. Now, when we read the story of Esther, it says there was a Jewish man in Shushan whose name was Mordechai. In Hebrew, Ish Yehudi. And then it says at the end of it, Ish Shemini, he was a Benjamin. We've discussed this in this class many times. Was he a Judah? Was he a Benjamin? What does it mean? It named two tribes, Judah and Benjamin. So there are multiple answers. One answer is that in the street, Mordechai never wanted to say who he really was. He said, I'm a Jew, against the Medrash I quoted earlier. Earlier I quoted a Medrash that said, bow down to me, he said, no, I'm a Benjamin. This is again, there's a different Medrash opposing that. Haman never knew who Mordechai's ancestor was. He was under the impression, Ish Yehudi. What tribe does Ish Yehudi sound like he comes from? Yehudi, that was the announcement. By the way, the Megillah tells us he was really a Benjamin. But he said like this, Mordechai, the moment you say you're a Jew, Esther, Haman's going to start realizing, because Haman knows this, according to this idea, Haman knows the strategy that, you know what, I'm going to lose to the people of Rachel's kids. That's a tough battle. Everyone else I can beat. Rachel's kids becomes a real battle, so I'll figure it out. So who's Mordechai? He's a Judah guy. I got him. I got nothing to worry about. He's a minor leaguer. Oh, Esther's the queen. Yeah, where is Esther from? She's Jewish? What's her ancestry? Now, since we know that Esther and Mordechai are related, and it comes up in multiple times, Esther is a granddaughter of who? Shaul HaMelech, Saul the king. Esther is a granddaughter of Shaul HaMelech. That's it. That's here. Which means, by the way, since Shaul comes from the tribe of Binyamin, Esther comes from Binyamin. Haman never would have made that move.
Esther was the granddaughter of Shaul? Not possible.
Granddaughter means descendant. I don't mean literally grandmother.
Okay.
Yes. Because yes.
Two generations later,
Shlomo, in fact, and I will show you.
Was built, then it's already the second
the pasuk says so like this.
Be, you know, 1,000 years later.
Just for the proof of the statement. Just for the proof of the statement.
800 years later.
It's Mordechai and Esther in chapter 6, chapter 4 of the story of Esther. We're going back and forth. Mordechai found about the plot. Yeah. He rips a sackcloth. He goes into the street. Him and Esther are sending back messages. What do we do here? What do we do here? And they have a massive fight. Another question maybe we'll ask one day. We already did a couple times. We'll come up with 52 different answers. Esther tells Mordechai, what do you want me to do? He says, listen, you got to go in. Go into the king. And Esther has a very simple response. This time of year, we discussed many times, is Passover time. The decree to kill everyone was 11 months later, Purim time. So Esther is telling Mordechai, listen. He hasn't called me in a while. We got 11 months to figure this out. What are we rushing in? And Mordechai is telling her, no. Here's in Yud Gimel. They related Esther's words to Mordechai, Pasuk 12 of 6. Then Mordechai said to reply to Esther, sent the messenger back. Listen to these words. Do not imagine that you will be able to escape in the king's palace any more than the rest of us. Don't think you're covered. For if you persist in keeping silent, the whole time he told her, keep quiet. Now he's telling her, go forward. At a time like this, relief and deliverance will come to the Jews from some other place. We're good. I'm taking on the battle. We're going to win. Next word. While you and your father's house will perish. So the commentators say, keep the family out of this. He should have told Esther, listen, Esther, don't hide in the palace in the broom closet and think you're getting away with this. Because that's not the goal here. Why out on you and your father's house? That doesn't sound nice. In Hebrew, the words are what? Ubeis avich. They're going to be destroyed. Sounds like a little cold. Keep my father out of it. So the commentators, going back hundreds of years, they point out that what he's telling her is this. Listen, Esther, your great-grandfather, named Shaul HaMelech, attacked Amalek, was supposed to kill him out, and he failed at his job. He allowed someone to live. He allowed a god to stay. He failed. He lost. Your family mission was failing him on some level. You think that you have the opportunity to escape unharmed? You are in the king's palace to make up for that mistake X amount of generations ago. You have to finish the job your father didn't begin. Father meaning father's house. You got to go after Haman and take care of him. And if you don't, you failed your father. Because that's why you're in it. Father means, again, father's house. That's why you're here. Your job right now as queen is to fix up the mistake from a couple hundred years ago. 500 years ago. You got to fix this up. That's why he said there, we're going to be okay, but you and your father's house are going to sink. Step up to the plate. So she was saying, let's take our time. No. You go in now, you fix up this mistake right away. Look at the Gemara says. A question we've asked in this class, I checked a search on rabbihavila.com and I could not find it. I don't understand who's writing the titles, and we couldn't find this for the record. Fascinating Talmud passage. Passage 22b in Yuma. Looked on Yuma also, I couldn't find it. Amar Rav Huna, Rav Huna said, Shaul erred in one sin and it was held against him. One sin. We know Shaul lost the kingdom. David sinned twice and he didn't lose the kingdom. Saul with one sin, David with two. So when we look around, we say Shaul lost the kingdom. David kept the kingdom. We'll think David's better. Thomas saying to point out, Shaul only made one mistake, David made two. So the obvious question becomes, okay, well, that's not fair then. What was Shaul's mistake? What was his mistake first? Here it says, the incident of Agag. I'm reading off scroll. Note 18. 18. He was commanded to kill all of the Amalekites, whatever that word is, Amalekites, and their animals. Shaul speared Agag, the king of Amalek, and the choicest sheep and cattle. He kept them livestock alive, and therefore he made a mistake. So he was punished. So the question becomes, wait, that's not fair. He made one mistake, he made two. I know he made one mistake. Why are you losing the kingdom because of that? So Ravan Kotla, who we quoted before, says, I'll tell you why. Very simple. Because Shaul was only king for one reason. Why was he king? Because you are going to be king, the three steps. King, fight Amalek, build the base of Middash. You were anointed a king in order to fight Amalek, in order to build the base of Middash in your territory. If once you failed as a king, the end of your job, there's no reason for it anymore. Now, you did enough, but then we're gonna build the base of Middash, but not enough that we're now going to tell you, you're good to go. So Shaul HaMelech's mistake, even though it might have been less, even though it was only one lesson in total for sure, he had two mistakes, he had one mistake, maybe it wasn't even such a bad mistake. He didn't do something. David might have actively done a sin. He might have killed someone. Shaul refrained. He was too slow in doing the right thing. Why did he lose the kingship? That's less of a sin. Because his sin was against the kingship. It was against what he was supposed to do. You were only hired as a king in order to kill Adamalek. If you don't do the job, then we don't need you here. Because it comes down to the same thing. We need them for that. So Mordechai was telling Esther, listen, Esther, you're from the tribe of Benjamin. Your father's house has been doing this. That's why we're here now. Get the job done. Now there's no longer hiding it. But back to the original question. Had Haman known that she was a Jew, it could be, not a general Jew, as we were saying the first half of this class, a new response. What he could have done was, he would have investigated, who is she? She's a Jew, what type of Jew is she? Because Haman knew, I could be the Judah, he thought Mordechai's a Judah, I could be the Levite, I could be the Ruveni, a Shemaini, I could beat these guys, but I can't beat Bnei Rachel. So he would have heard that the queen's in the palace, not a general Jew thing. He would have said, what type of Jew is she? He would have investigated, he would have revealed that she was Saul, the king's great-great-granddaughter. Oh, that's bad. That's bad. Because that would mean I can't fight this. Can't poke the beer, can't start the chess match, can't bring in the second Beis HaMikdash. That was great. When I say that.
So then,
wait, question, he was first.
Mordechai also was from the house of Benjamin.
He said before.
Great, so. Great grandchild Saul as well. So why wasn't he charged with rectifying the damage? He's just as responsible to rectify.
Well, we go through the story. Remember, he is actively involved in this whole story. Oh,
so
he is actively involved. Yes.
It's a two-person job now.
Yes. Yes. Yes, it's a two-person job. And
it used to be one person, now it's two.
We're so concerned about him finding out that Esther is related, right? But
to Bnei Rachel.
And therefore he would be able to defeat her, but then...
He wouldn't have started the battle against Bnei Rachel. He would have been too afraid to start a battle against Bnei Rachel.
Would it have been better had he known, and then he wouldn't have started any trouble at all?
Well, that's what we said before. He wanted to start the process to get the best finish. We got
to
poke the beer.
To be a war.
We needed the war to get the base of Middash. It's a wild idea.
Okay.
You can rewatch in a couple days on rabbihavila.com or on Spotify. I don't know what it's called.
So is Hamas not Amalekite?
Who?
Hamas is not Amalekite?
Odds are not, because odds are they're Arabs. And Amalek might be. I don't think they are.
I think they were Ishmael and Amalekite combined.
Which makes sense.
That'd be a crazy crossover.
They did. Esav married Yishmael's daughter.
That's pretty messed up.
They did it, according to the Kabbalistic writing, they did it on purpose. They realized that each one brought different facets to the table, and together they unite.
Unstoppable, yeah.
They unite.
So
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
and th- yeah.
Pretty scary.
Was Bodenheim on, just Stephen? Great to know you guys were there. Thank you.